Caution urged on recruiting UK cops. A trio arrested after the bashing of an elderly man. And scientists deliver a final warning on the climate crisis. It's Tuesday, the 21st of March.
The West Live with Matt Tinney and Ben O'Shea.
G'day, Matty.
G'day, mate. Happy Tuesday.
Yeah, happy Taco Tuesday to you. And now let's talk about this fatality that's happened in Forestdale overnight.
Yeah, an awful crash. A man has been killed and a woman is fighting for life in Royal Perth Hospital this morning after a car launched over a roundabout and rolled, ending up on its roof on Armidale Road. The car is unrecognisable. You couldn't tell what type of car it is. So the woman was initially taken to Fiona Stanley Hospital, but she has since been transferred to the trauma unit at RPH.
Yeah, we'll wait to find out more about that one, but it does seem as though they didn't even realise there was a roundabout there and they've just gone straight over the top of it.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, police will obviously look at a number of factors, including speed. They're surprised at how far over the roundabout the car has ended up. And, obviously, when you look at the vehicle, the roof has just been squashed by it landing on its roof.
Mm. And there was a disturbing armed robbery in Warwick last night.
Yeah, this happened at the Shell service station. So officers have been told that a man entered the service station, threatened an employee in there with a firearm and demanded cigarettes. That man has fled on foot with the cigarettes. Luckily, the worker was not harmed during the whole incident. And officers have arrested a man at a Belga address, we're told. That has just happened in the last hour. So he is assisting police with his inquiry.
Geez, you'd have to be pretty desperate for a durry, wouldn't you?
To have a firearm.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Like the armed robbery for cigarettes. I feel for the staff member of that service station. That sort of thing can be quite
traumatic.
Yeah, how
frightening. You'd hand them over straight away, wouldn't you?
And talking about law and order, as we've spoken about before, there's been a huge recruiting drive to bring international police officers to WA as part of this concerted effort to address staff shortages at WA Police. There've been nearly 1,000 applications from British and Irish cops. We know Police Minister Paul Papalia was over there in the UK in Dublin. I think they imported beach sand into the pubs there to try and lure the cops. Well, it all sounds pretty great, but not so fast, because it isn't the first time that WA Police have mounted an overseas recruitment drive, and the bloke who oversaw the last one, former Commissioner Carlo Callaghan, has come out and urged a word of caution. In the next 24 hours, we're expected to see the release of a long-awaited review of Greater London's Metropolitan Police that will reportedly find that the force over there is rife with racism, homophobia and sexism. So I guess the worry here is some of the police that we might be importing could be facing some issues over on their home turf. We might not know about it. O'Callaghan said that when they did their recruitment drive, there wasn't really much of an issue with discipline with the new police officers that they brought in. There was a couple of bad apples, but he said that there's always a possibility that you don't get all of the information when you're getting the clearance information on these officers. And so if a police officer over in the UK is under investigation, but no conclusion has been reached, you might not actually know anything about that situation because of, you know, the idea of natural justice. And if nothing ends up being substantiated, you're kind of, you know, innocent until proven guilty. But it might mean that you're getting police officers that could be facing some pretty serious charges over there in the UK. We wouldn't even know about it. And ironically, the UK is in the midst of its own mass exodus of police officers, with a recent University of Portsmouth analysis finding that it was driven by poor leadership and management, which is what the WA Police Union say is the issue here in WA.
Yeah, so you're saying they might be coming over here and then ending up with the same same issue.
Well, exactly. And Carlo Callaghan said that the biggest issue last time around was retention, that the cops came over here from the UK, spent a couple of years and then got homesick and left anyway. And so in the end, it didn't really prove to be much of a fillip for the problem in the first place. So I guess we'll wait and see. And now there's been some arrests made in that shocking bashing of an elderly man in Dudley Park in Mandurah.
Yeah, three juveniles have been taken into custody after this 87-year-old man was bashed unconscious during a home invasion in Dudley Park. This happened on Friday night. The man was taken to hospital and had to be treated for serious injuries after being bashed and losing consciousness. So police are telling us that these three juveniles are assisting them with their inquiries at this stage. Just keep an eye on this one for charges later today.
Yeah, we'll watch that one very closely. And there was a dramatic arrest. Talking about arrests, there was a dramatic one on a Jetstar flight after a man refused to take his seat.
Yeah, this is incredible. You know when things just escalate? That's what happened exactly. In this case. So this man has been charged with disorderly behaviour, yeah, after he allegedly refused to move to his assigned seat when he was asked while on a plane in Perth that was heading for Melbourne. He never made it to Melbourne. It's understood the man initially sat next to a second passenger he was travelling with, and when asked to take his assigned seat before takeoff, staff alleged he became abusive. The Australian Federal Police became involved. They asked the 30-year-old to get off. He allegedly assaulted an officer during that attempt and was tasered. As I say, it really escalated. So he's now going to fight this charge, going on trial in the middle of the year. The interesting thing is that he's stuck here in WA unless a magistrate changes his bail conditions. So he faces, you know, about 4 months in WA.
Wow.
Ahead of this trial.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he says he's not going to fly
Jetstar again. And I don't think it's going to happen because Jetstar has banned him from flying with the airline.
Wow. That's going to be, I can't wait to see that one go before the courts. And now after years of waiting and deliberation, it looks like WA is finally going to get its artificial wave park.
Yeah, I can't remember a time before talking about Perth's first surf park, but here we are. It has been given the green light, and this is like the final green light by state planners, because we had a couple of weeks ago we talked about when it was the Environment Authority saying it was happy for it to proceed. Now state planners have given the $100 million proposal the green light. Construction looks like it will begin later this year. It's going to include a lagoon that can produce 25 different types of waves. So we're talking waves from like knee-high waves for kids right through to barrels and point break waves that are quite steep.
100-year storm.
For experienced surfers.
For Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, you'll love this, it's going to include a beach club and restaurants and bars. You never know. They might channel, you know, the kind of European beach clubs or the ones we're seeing popping up in Bali there at the facility. It's going to be in Jandakot.
Which is where all the great beach clubs of the world should be located. How much do you reckon an Uber down to Jandakot is going to cost?
I know. Well, this is the thing. The panel that assessed it brought up, one person brought up parking issues, etc., but said, you know, this is going to be a, you know, tourism boon for WA. We need to, you know, get this up and running.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, is it going to be a tourism boom? I don't know. There's wave parks over east.
Yeah, exactly. So. Wave parks over east. We also have like dozens of kilometres of coastline with waves. I guess we'll see. I guess we will wait and see. As long as it's not too much taxpayer money being spent on it, some company wants to blow $100 million, whatever.
Well, it's $100 million. And, you know, that land was earmarked for something. So if it wasn't going to be this surf park, it was probably going to be an oval.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well,
If
we don't do something about the climate crisis, we might find that the actual ocean is almost washing over the artificial wave park, because scientists, Maddie, have delivered overnight a final warning on the climate crisis as rising greenhouse gas emissions push the world to the brink of irrevocable damage. And now the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, is made up of the world's leading climate scientists, and they've been releasing information over the little while. And now they've set out the final part of their Mammoth 6 assessment report overnight. And so this is a comprehensive review of human knowledge of the climate crisis. It took hundreds of scientists 8 years to compile. It runs to thousands of pages. So it's the most comprehensive review of the climate situation. But it boiled down to one message in the end, which was act now or it'll be too late. The next update is not going to be till around 2030. And by that time, a lot of the critical choices will have had to be made. Otherwise, it'll be too late to limit global temperature rises to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels, which is the threshold that scientists say beyond which our damage to the climate will rapidly become irreversible. And so we're talking about, you know, the impacts of climate change are things like floods, extreme weather, bushfires, all of that kind of stuff, which cost dozens, if not hundreds of thousands of lives every year. And it's only going to get worse. So the question is, can anything be done about it? The report says, yes, it can. There is hope, but it has to be done now or it will be too late. Sport. Are you much of a rugby fan, Matty?
Oh, no. No. AFL.
So this one will be a bit out of your wheelhouse, but the Rugby World Cup, I'm sure you know about. Australians don't watch it as closely as we used to when we used to win it. We don't have high expectations this time around when it kicks off in just 6 months, but Irish eyes are smiling on the chances of the winners of the Six Nations tournament over the weekend. So Ireland, who just notched a so-called Grand Slam in the Six Nations, which is where you beat everybody else in the tournament, has averaged 4 tries per match. And they ended defending champion and World Cup hosts France's 14-game unbeaten run. They're on their own 10-game winning streak, which includes back-to-back wins over the All Blacks, which even a casual observer of rugby like you, Matty, will know that the All Blacks are the cream of the crop. The Irish
are
You know that.
They're good at the haka.
They're very good at that. And the Irish are currently sitting on top of the world rankings. The Grand Slam title now has Ireland listed among the 4 favourites to lift the William Webb Ellis Cup in Paris on October 28 when the World Cup comes to its conclusion. But the only time a Northern Hemisphere team has ever won the World Cup was England back in 2003. The rest of the time it's been South Africa, New Zealand, the Aussies as well, but that hasn't been for a while. So the last time England won in 2003, it warmed up with a Grand Slam triumph first. So, you know, maybe Ireland is in with a red hot chance.
Ooh, 20 years. So 2003 was the last one.
Northern Hemisphere teams generally do not fare well, but it's in Paris, so you just never know.
The Wild West.
Now, you know every year the UN releases its annual World Happiness Report?
Oh, yes.
So they've just done it overnight.
Like telling us where the happiest place
exactly,
is.
Exactly, and I've got that information, but you're going to have to wait for it because I've got some other information first. So the
Such
big,
a tease.
So the big takeaway is that global, and this is actually quite amazing, so the big takeaway from the UN's Global Happiness Report is that global happiness generally has not taken a hit in the 3 years of the COVID-19 pandemic. Can you believe that?
Well, that's interesting. I wonder if it's because during the pandemic, you know, it was all rainbow pictures and people going for walks and looking at teddy bears.
Everyone
and,
working from home, not even
working from
to
home.
The office.
I mean, there were parts of it that I can understand why people were perhaps a little happier. I mean, never mind the death and destruction going on around us. But, yeah, it's interesting. So it hasn't taken a hit. So it's exactly the same.
Exactly the same. So basically the way they work this thing is they measure it over sort of a 3-year span. And so each annual report is based on the previous 3 years. And so the previous 3 years of the pandemic weren't really any different in terms of global happiness to the 3 years before the pandemic, which maybe says more about what life was like before the pandemic than anything else. but do you want to guess the world's happiest country?
I don't know. I mean, I'd be happy in Italy. There's a lot of pasta and wine and cheese. So.
I think depends
what the criteria are.
I think the criteria is not just, you know, sort of your boozy lifestyle. For the sixth year in a row, it was Finland.
Oh, I've been there.
They have dominated. They just absolutely kill it when it comes to global happiness. So the Nordic country and its neighbours, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden and Norway, all pretty much top the list because they score very well on the criteria that the report uses to explain its findings, things like life expectancy, sort of a healthy life, GDP per capita, social support, low corruption in government, generosity in a community, philanthropy, stuff like that. a freedom to make key life decisions. So in those criteria, the Nordic countries score very well. Israel moved up to number 4, which was a bit of a surprise. It's up from number 9 last year. I wouldn't have thought Israel would have ranked so highly, but they're very parochial, I guess, maybe. The Netherlands, number 5. Switzerland, number 8. Luxembourg, number 9. And New Zealand rounded up the top 10, number 10. Do you want to know where
finished? Where were we?
Well, yeah. You know, a respectable number 12.
Number 12. So the Kiwis are happier than we are.
Kiwis are happier than us, but I'm sure this report was done before Jacinda Ardern pulled the pin. So maybe, you know, maybe if you do it now, that might not be the case. Canada, number 13. Ireland, number 14. The United States came in at number 15, which I'm surprised about. It doesn't seem like anybody in the US is happy at the moment. Same with the UK. They finished at number 19.
Do you know the most unhappy country in the world?
You know what? I don't
have
think
we got that.
They didn't
list
They
didn't
that.
Go that far. Okay.
No, do you know what? No, that's okay. Not true. That's not true. And I've just looked it up. They did. And it's really no surprise. So at the very bottom of the list, which they just said is that like the, you know, not the unhappiest, but the least happy, Afghanistan.
Yes. Okay.
Number 137. They got some problems now that the Taliban's taken over again. I'm not at all surprised about that. Lebanon.
Where did Ukraine come in?
So Ukraine.
Questions without notice.
Yeah. So Ukraine number 92.
So okay, and Russia
number 70.
Okay.
So there you go. So they've both taken a hit. But still, I'm surprised that Ukraine isn't lower. But I think they're very resilient, you know. So they find a way to see the positives, and good on them for doing it. Well, there you go. So there's the happiness rating, and that's your news from the West Australian for Tuesday, March 21. And don't forget to subscribe to the West Live on your favourite podcast player. Matty, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Will do. Cheers, mate.
You've been listening to the West Live with Matt Tinney and Ben O'Shea.